Not everyone who watches porn becomes a serial killer, but every serial killer watches porn. On that statement, today we are diving into the world of porn addictions. Approximately 11% of men and 3% of women have a porn addiction. To give you an easy comparison for those numbers, about 13% of the Canadian population smoke, which means there's almost as many male porn addicts as there are male smokers in Canada. And the impact of this affects all of us as individuals, and in fact, it affects the whole world. From the porn industry and sex trafficking to the general future of society, things like declining birth rates and a dystopian future where people don't even bother with real relationships. Of course, here in the present day, porn addictions have a huge impact on someone's sense of self-worth, and it is the most private and shameful of the legal addictions out there that you are probably surprised to hear affects a lot more people than you perhaps realized. Of course, getting over any addiction requires a growth mindset, and also if you're trying to help someone with an addiction that you don't understand, again, you really have to learn to embrace the difficulties and try to get. So on that, to join me today, I have a porn addiction coach and a recovered addict, Powerful Eric, who has helped countless people from Hollywood stars to teenagers, and our conversation really did open my eyes. To prepare for this episode, I did quite a lot of research and was truly blown away by the scale and severity of the problem. Even if you don't have a porn addiction yourself, I think you'll find this episode very interesting because, trust me, without a doubt, you know several people in your life who do have a porn addiction. A big trigger warning as well for the episode, besides talking about porn and addictions, we will also, at least sometimes briefly, mention things like psychosis, suicide, murder, and even child abuse. So if you're not into hearing about those things, or if you have kids with you and you don't want them to hear about any of those things, now is a good time to change episode. And with that, hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. This episode is an absolute banger, pun intended, so stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
One area I've always found intriguing with addictions is, how do you recognize that it's become an addiction? Because often it's just like a very slow trickle that gets worse and worse, where you're kind of usually lying to yourself about things. I found a really fascinating thread on Reddit, just full of crazy things that people had got to before they were like, oh, I do have an addiction. There was this one guy who had gone to Turkey on holiday and tried to access his favorite porn and realized that they don't allow porn at all in Turkey. And he actually left his vacation early just to get home to watch porn. And he was like, oh, I do have an addiction. And he then checked himself into therapy and quit. And you could say he quit cold turkey.
Oh, that's good.
A true story though. But yes, I did make notes, I told you. Yeah. But anyway, there was a question in there.
Right. Yeah. How do you know if you're addicted? Well, first of all, Sam, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast, the Growth Mindset Podcast. That name is like exactly what I deal with on a daily basis. And specifically, I deal with sex and porn addiction, but other addictions as well. But how do you know if you are addicted? Well, here's one. If you have to ask yourself, am I addicted? The answer is probably yes. But I'll go a little bit further. How does it affect your life? So there's some people that can pick up a can of beer and they go about their business and they're fine and they're all good. There's other people that have pick up a beer or whatever, and they can't help but get smashed. It negatively affects their life. So same thing with porn or sex addiction. If you're having to leave your vacation early to go act out the porn, that is, in my opinion, negatively affecting your life. So a lot of the people that contact me are often men whose wives have either kicked them out or want to kick them out or want to divorce them over porn addiction. And sometimes, as you can imagine, it goes even further than that. They went beyond porn addiction and they went out into the real world to see prostitutes or another girlfriend or something like that. So to answer your question succinctly, is it negatively affecting your life? Like, I had a client recently who was using a popular online chat room thing, and he put it on credit cards and everything, $40,000. And of course, his wife was ready to divorce him and having to pay that all off. So do you feel bad about yourself? Like, I've not talked to anyone yet that has said, oh, you know, after I masturbate to porn, I just feel so good about myself and I want to go tell everybody what I did. And, you know, hey, I was masturbating to porn all day today. Aren't you proud of me? Like, said no one ever.
I wonder if there are people that have ever done that. Fascinating. At what point did you realize you had a porn addiction then?
So I started very young, actually before the internet was even around. And I had found some neighbor's magazines and I found a VHS tape porn video, but I wasn't really addicted then, but I did start early. But what happened is when high-speed internet came around, then I was hooked. Like, high-speed internet porn is different from other forms of porn, like a DVD or a magazine or even a VHS tape, because it's endless. Like, there's always another woman or whatever you prefer. There's always another person to see, and there's novelty. And therein is the hook with internet porn that makes it different. It's novelty. And that hooks your brain like, oh, a new mate. Oh, another new mate. Oh, a new mate. Another new mate. And so you stay online to see who's your next mate. And not only is there novelty, it's free and it's easily accessible. Those three things create the ultimate addiction because there's really nothing else there like it. Drugs, alcohol, and all that stuff. Like, you have to either go out and get it or buy it or whatever. And it's certainly not free. So what I realized, there was a couple levels, but I'll tell you one of the worst times was when a friend of mine, she was dying from breast cancer. And at the time I was traveling for the job I had and we were going to meet for lunch. And so I was using porn that morning and I lost track of time, like I often would, because I would get these horse blinders on when I'm using porn. I kind of forget sense of time and where I'm at and all that. And then when I came to, so to say, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was supposed to meet Heather for lunch. So I called her up. I lied, as I often did back then, and said, oh, I'm sorry, something came up. Can we reschedule? And she's like, oh, sure, no problem. So then soon after, I ran into a mutual friend and they said, did you hear about Heather? And I'm like, no, what? And they said, she died. So I chose to use pornography over seeing my dying friend. And I knew, like, oh my God. First, I was really upset about that, of course. And then I'm like, man, I got a problem.
So what was your own personal journey like in terms of beating the addiction?
When I realized I had a problem, I did seek help. So one of the first therapists I saw said that I had to go to 12-step. It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous, 12-step programs. That was an absolute must. And he was the professional. I wanted help. So I followed by the book what he told me to do. And I'll never forget the first meeting I went to. There was a convicted felon for actually following through physically with, I'll just say, underage people. And so here I am, I'm trying to break my porn addiction, and I'm in the room with convicted felons. Now, I'm not saying that I'm better than anybody else or anything like that, but I'm just saying that it was not empowering. But he was very adamant that I needed to go to these meetings, and I went to those meetings for almost 20 years. They take the 12-step model that was created for alcohol and drugs and just move that over to sex and porn. But sex and porn addiction is a different animal. People come and go, come and go. And there was like maybe one or two people that were sober. But, you know, I was desperate. I'm like, I've been doing this. I'm going to my therapist. I'm on antidepressant drugs. And so I found this little app that was to help break porn addiction. And in the 12-step programs, they have you say you're powerless over the addiction. I said that for almost 20 years. And so I was creating my login credentials. And just on a whim, I thought, I'm going to make my login powerful, Eric. And in that moment, pitiful, powerless, porn addicted Eric died and powerful Eric was born. So I don't call myself powerful Eric out of ego. It's out of having called myself powerless and a piece of poo for decades. And little did I know that that seemingly little change would change the trajectory of my whole life and countless other people. I found this coaching program that had a totally different mindset. And instead, it was more like counting what positive things you're bringing into your life. And so from that, it was really a critical, crucial time in my life. And then from there, I found some new tools and I became a sex and porn addiction recovery coach. There's a mammoth, huge story there, but that's it in a nutshell.
How do you help people with the process of like identity reconstruction so that they can recover, because that's surely what people should be doing?
That's a great, great question. And I never heard it quite put that way. I like the way you put that, identity reconstruction, because really that's what it is. I mean, the first part of the program, we have to uncover the person, like they get buried in this addiction and shame and guilt and trauma and things that happen from childhood, and have a story that illustrates that. I don't know the date exactly, but about 1,000 years ago, there was a group of monks and they had created this giant golden Buddha. An invading army was coming and they knew that the army would melt down the Buddha for the gold. So they hid it by covering it in clay and dirt. And their plan did work. The invading army came. They did not find the golden Buddha. However, they killed everyone that knew that it was there. So it literally sat there for like 200 years with no one knowing it's there. And then one day a monk is outside meditating. The sun's shining and he notices this glimmer of light reflecting and he goes to investigate and he finds this gold and all the monks come over and they unearth this giant golden Buddha. And this is a metaphor for us, for life, that you know, we get buried in all this muck, but underneath there is that gold. So the first part of the process is to unearth that gold. We have to get off all that muck. After we do that, we start on the identity reconstruction. It's really revealing the person unto themselves. It's what's already there. You know, like all these positive characteristics and traits. For example, one of my clients was a compulsive liar. So we had to start to bring to the surface the characteristic of being honest. And so I asked him, have you ever, like, oh, I'm a compulsive liar. I never say the truth about anything. I lie all the time. And I'm like, so you've never been honest about anything in your whole life? He's like, well, yeah, of course, I'm honest about this and I'm honest about that. So there are times when you're honest. He's like, yeah. So you're saying there are times in your life when you are honest? He's like, yes. Okay, that's all we need to know. So we can build from there. We have all these different traits, like maybe being brave. Oh, I'm not brave. I'm the scariest cat in the planet. I cower from anything. So you've never been brave about anything in your whole life ever? Did you learn to drive a car? It's like, yeah. Were you scared when you were learning to drive the car? Well, yeah, I was a little scared. So that's called bravery. when a person is doing something that makes them scared, but they do it anyway, it's called being brave. And so that's what the second part is on the identity reconstruction, is bringing those characteristics and qualities and traits that they already have, just bringing them to the surface and using them.
Sounds like a lot of similarities to CBT in addressing people's self-limiting beliefs. Do you find that because of the general shame involved, that everyone has found themselves becoming more of a liar when they have got into porn addiction?
Well, addiction in general invites lying because you have to cover up what you're doing. And you had asked that question earlier, how do you know if you're addicted? Are you having to hide what you're doing all the time? If you're having to hide what you're doing all the time, often, and there's your another answer for you. So whether it's drug, alcohol, or porn, that invites lying. There's a lot more shame with sex and porn addiction than there is with drugs and alcohol, because alcohol addiction recovery is almost like a badge of honor now. Like you hear about somebody in Hollywood and, oh, they've been sober for X amount of years now, and oh, isn't that great? Aren't they a wonderful person? But if you said this about the same thing, oh, he was a sexaholic and he was addicted to porn and he's over that now, it's like, I don't know about that. So there's a lot more shame associated with sex and porn addiction. And so hence it invites even more lying, even more covering up.
I am delighted to recommend my sponsor, Cozy Earth, whose bedding and loungewear I genuinely love. It's made from high quality viscose from bamboo, and it gets softer with every wash. It was voted as Oprah's favorite things several years in a row, and it's because their bed sheets are so damn incredible. Their collection also includes some divine loungewear for your home or travel. They have cute little tote bags to carry your gear anywhere. So whether you are exploring through a journey of personal growth or discovering new parts of the world, you can nestle up under starry skies with the softness of Cozy Earth's loungewear. So pack your bags, venture on and visit cozyearth.com today and use code GROWTH at checkout for an exclusive 35% off. And let Cozy Earth be your travel companion on the road to adventurous growth. CozyEarth.com and use code GROWTH at checkout. It's funny, just the general concept of how shameful it is. It's always been a taboo topic, sex, and like there's been a lot of shame on women historically around prostitution and sex out of marriage and stuff. But it does feel like that is less of a problem. Definitely still a bad thing. But it does seem like there's a big stigma now against men who do have porn addictions. And there is an increasingly large number of them. And certainly, like on Reddit, the amount of women that don't understand porn addictions, like what is wrong with men? Why do these men have these things? And they're very blameful, which I'm not saying that it isn't any one man's fault or not for getting porn addicted, but it's certainly a very hard one if you are then trying to like get out of it and talk about it. And certainly there's lying to other people about it that you're not doing it isn't helpful, but then also saying that you're completely powerless to it and going to these meetings and constantly saying that you are freeing yourself of your lies and then saying that you can't do it is like another bad thing to be saying.
You had mentioned about the large number of people getting addicted now. To give you an idea of how pervasive porn addiction is, the little blue pill that usually older men take to overcome erectile dysfunction, well, the largest growing demographic now that is taking the little blue pill are 20-year-olds because they've had access to high-speed internet porn since they were little, and they cannot get it up without pornography or the blue pill. So the 20-year-olds are taking the blue pill to get up. And I'm not trying to be ignorant here when I say this, but like, I can't imagine, like when I think back when I was 20, oh my gosh, like you have to take a pill to get it up. That's how pervasive porn addiction is.
And yeah, a lot of it you just don't see because it's always hidden because no one's going out telling you about it, which yeah, it does make it hard to really quantify. And yeah, obviously like porn has always been a huge part of the internet since the internet was invented.
Like we carry in our pockets with these smartphones, literally we're carrying in our pockets the world's largest library of porn that has ever existed.
Yeah, which isn't that healthy for your concentration.
You're developing people that have the attention spans of a gnat, like with TikTok, for example, you know, these super short videos, Instagram and all that. We're training ourselves to have the attention span of a gnat. We can't concentrate anymore.
The other part of training yourself of when you are watching porn, then when you do see other women online that are just thirst traps, it kind of triggers you. It's not healthy either, because you should be able to just watch a video with a woman in it without getting completely distracted. If you look at like the evolutionary perspective or from psychology, isn't does sort of make a lot of sense in terms of men are built to try and spread their seed and enjoy it and do it as much as possible. I'm not saying it's a good thing or like this is a good reason for it, but if there's like a weird technological hack that hits you, well, your body is optimized to then like train itself to like find and seek the same rewards, which isn't good.
And you're exactly right. We've evolved for millions of years as men. We are biologically hardwired to seek mates. And basically, whether we know it or not, we're looking for those childbearing hips. So the internet, there's always a new set of childbearing hips. And we, as men at this time, we can see more naked women than our ancestors would see in lifetimes. We're not designed to have just like endless mates forever.
Certainly back in like tribal ages of you were rewarded if you could be ingenious enough to be clever and powerful and become a leader with multiple wives and get to have lots more sex. And it was like direct reward training of doing sensible things as you get more sex. Obviously, I personally prefer monogamy, but it is just like funny how you're just hardwired in the same way. Like if there was just some like pill that came around that just sort of suddenly everyone was just ultimately happy the entire time, it would be like a really bad thing. But you could see a computer might think like, oh, if I'm meant to make the world happy, I should give everyone this pill and they'll all just feel happy the entire time. It's just like a weird technological new distraction that hits you. Another thing I found when I was doing some research was like often depression and porn addiction seems to go hand in hand for people. And there are even people saying that they're not even doing it for pleasure, but just for distraction. But they don't actually use porn so much when they are happy. And that's one of their signs of when they are addicted. Do you try and train people around depression and helping them in other things? Or do you just try to directly address the porn addiction?
When I first started, I was just addressing the porn addiction itself, but then it evolved into more, once we got them out of the muck, into the identity with the way you see yourself. But as far as the depression goes, often the depression will lift because your brain is getting all this massive amount of dopamine and other chemicals when you are viewing pornography. And so what happens is you're getting all these brain cookies from watching porn. So what happens then is that when you go out into the regular world and do something that would normally bring you pleasure, let's say it's fishing, like you like to fish, but now fishing no longer is as pleasurable as it was before. So then the depression comes on and there's nothing that can compete with it. I used to be able to enjoy going out with my friends, but now all I can think of is I just want to get back home and open my browser to watch porn. The dopamine, the feel-good brain cookies I get from going out with my friends no longer holds a candle to porn. And so this builds depression. Like nothing seemingly can make me happy anymore except for pornography.
Which doesn't make you happy, so you're stuck doing more of it.
Exactly. That's the vicious cycle.
You mentioned before our chat around the concept of mindset and the disease-based model of addiction. Seems like a relevant time to ask about that.
When you go to a traditional recovery program, most of them use what's called the disease-based model of addiction or variations. And basically, as the name implies, it says you have a disease and you have it for life. There's nothing you can do. And I tell you, that is really, at least for me, it was very disempowering to be told I have a disease. And I thought to myself, how did I catch this disease? Did I catch this or was this genetic? And so there's people that will vehemently fight me on this. I was on a podcast with some other recovery coaches and they said, No, it is a disease. It's a dis-ease in the body. And I do agree with that. Like, you know, there's a dis-ease in the body. But my question to them is, okay, let's say you are correct. Then is saying it to yourself over and over, I have a disease, is that helpful? So I have to go to this program for the rest of my entire life because I have a disease. I mean, if saying to yourself you have a disease is helping you, then great. But it didn't help me. It disempowered me.
Yeah, I generally don't like things that are sort of disempowering or take away your locus of control, because it's your decision at every point. If you say like, oh, I'm diseased, I can't stop myself, then why are you ever going to stop yourself?
And so the opposite, though, of the disease-based model of addiction is mindfulness. Mindfulness says, I don't have to say that I am a sexaholic, that I am powerless. I can say I was moving through this addiction, yes, for many years, maybe even all my life, but I'm ready to move out of this addiction and become powerful Eric, or to become powerful Sam, or whatever name I have my clients come up with. That, and I totally subscribe to the mindfulness model. And there's a lot of tools that I can use underneath mindfulness that work really well, like EFT and, of course, identity change.
One thing I've been thinking from the conversation and also stuff that I was reading around the concept of porn being something that really does suck you in. And just as technology is improving, it does feel like it's an almost dangerous place to go to, and things kind of just only get amplified and worse. And there's the whole desensitization. There's loads of people on the internet are like just getting into darker and darker holes. And there's a whole subreddit for people that are just like getting like multiple screens going to have a crazy setups just to watch more porn. Maybe a trigger warning, but like I read one guy who finally realized he had an addiction when he said his penis wouldn't get hard unless there was a girl in school uniform throwing up on a dick. And you're like, yeah, you have a problem. Which now that I've been looking at these things, I'm like, oh my God, I don't even want to like vaguely go near porn. And so my question that I was leading up to here was, is there a level of porn that can be healthy?
Before I answer that question, though, I want to back up a little bit. So the desensitization, it's scary to go into the porn world because it's seemingly now like a bottomless pit. The thing that's scary now is artificial intelligence with porn. You wouldn't believe all of the things that are going on now. People haven't realized it. When you go on a tube site, artificial intelligence is serving up to you what it's kind of like cracking the door, like, oh, you've been watching this straight porn, but what about transsexual porn? Or what about gay porn? Like, you know, it puts all these little things out there. That's on the not so severe side. The artificial intelligence stuff that you can create now. And for example, like if you put pictures of, let's say, your cousin or your kid or whatever online, well, a pornographer can very easily just take the image of your child and do whatever they want to with it. So this is a whole huge conversation with artificial intelligence and porn. Like, this has only just begun it. And so if you are wanting to stop your porn addiction, like, now's the time to do it, because the things that are coming are going to be so powerful that I think that there'll become a time where it'll be almost impossible to stop. And this is what I mean. There's an old movie from the 80s called Brainstorm. And in the movie, the actor, Christopher Watkins, plays the main character. He plays a scientist. And in the movie, they developed this device, this helmet that you put on that can record all your sensations, all your thoughts, everything. So you can record that. And then if a person has another headset just like that, they can play it back. And I believe, like, when it gets to that, I don't know that I could ever come back out. And that's what happened in the movie. This one older guy who probably hadn't had sex in a long time, he put on this headset and was like this vegetable, just in this constant state of euphoria. And so he wouldn't come out. And then he gets woken up and he grabs the guy's collar and is like, no, I want to back in. It's kind of like the Matrix. And so that is coming. If you don't get yourself out now with our artificial intelligence, it may in the future be almost impossible to escape the Matrix of porn. Completely serious.
Yeah, as in there's the whole trend in reduced fertility and then just like more single men. I think porn is like a major contribution to that, but it's definitely just getting worse. If you just look at like AI girlfriends are going to get better and better, as well as the actual just technology to experience it and be in those places. It's going to be nuts in the future.
It is. Think of robotics now. I mean, that's huge.
Maybe we're all just going to have robot partners in the future. Yes, who wants a real partner?
And within the next 5 years, robotics and AI is going to dramatically change the world. There was a expert in all this, and he said, a lot of people are comparing artificial intelligence to the birth of the internet. It's such a huge world-changing thing. And he said, no. This is not compared to the birth of the internet. You need to compare this to the birth of fire. On the other hand, though, so there's a lot of positive things coming along that can help us. And it's like anything else, like a nuclear energy, you can level a city with it, or you can power a city with it. Same thing with artificial intelligence. There'll be a lot of really great positive things to come.
Also, just in terms of other mental disorders and how porn can amplify this. Like, I was reading one comment from someone who said her ex-husband had stopped sleeping. He'd watch porn for 5 hours straight or more. And in the end, he basically moved out into their RV and was parked out on their property. He got a VR headset to watch porn as much as he could. He then tried to kill her 3 times and became suicidal. So she left at this point for her own health and safety. And she said that she hoped he's now changed and stuff, but she's no idea why someone would try to kill someone who's their best friend, to which he said that she was. And she's assuming that he's mentally ill and doesn't know what to do. But like, have you had many people with a story like that, or who have become mentally ill, and if it was related to porn or something else triggered them?
What comes to my mind is ADHD, attention deficit disorder. I am not a doctor, but you know, we're talking about positive things. I just happen to have right here, actually, there's a book called The Craving Cure by Julia Ross. She has several books, but one of the other books is called The Mood Cure. And this is using food and supplements to help people with addiction and ADHD, things like that. I've not had a client that was to that extreme that you're talking about. 2 days, I'm flying out to a client in Hollywood to stay with him, to help him in his situation. I can't go into details or anonymity and all that, but that is a rare thing. So yeah, there are extreme cases like the guy that spent $40,000 talking to women online.
Because I know it generally can be comorbid with other addictions. If it's maybe just a trait of like perhaps other things, because of smoking weed or certain like psychoactive drugs can also trigger people if they're going to be like schizophrenic. I would say ADHD is just a lack of control of your attention. You're not going to kill someone or try to just because you're ADHD. To be very clear.
That'd be more of a psychopath or a sociopath type of person, yeah.
So I think it's a much deeper mental illness than just some attention deficit disorder. But yeah, I was just wondering if you've seen much relation with other addictions and or mental health disorders, I guess.
I do. Bad habits have bad habit buddies, and good habits have good habit buddies. For example, one of the things that I used to do very frequently is binge on pornography and then go binge on fast food. But the good news is, though, it goes the other direction. Good habits have good habit buddies. So for example, let's say you just went and you worked out at the gym. When I go to the gym afterwards, I do not feel like going and binging on fast food. I may do a good thing like drinking a lot of water. I've got water right here. So that's another good habit. And maybe if I'm going to the gym and I'm drinking water at night, I want to make sure I brush my teeth before I go to bed, another good habit. You know, so these good habits build other good habits, whereas bad habits will build other bad habits.
Definitely. I would say like willpower is like regenerative, renewable, as in like the more things you do, the more willpower you have, I find. It's the whole like concept of ego depletion, which is just a bit of a myth in psychology that sort of if you have a hard day, it's too hard to go to the gym or do something social, but actually you'll find that it's probably just a bit of a context switch and you're not ready for something and you just perceive it as difficult. But if you ever do go to the gym after a hard day, you love it. Like the first 10 minutes, you're like, you're tired. Then you're like, oh, actually, I'm fine. I do have all this energy. It appears again.
Way back when I was having challenges getting myself to the gym, I had a rule for myself. And I'm not suggesting people adopt this rule. This was a thing for myself. If I got home from work, at the time I had a regular job, and if I came home from work and I was absolutely exhausted and there was no way I could work out, then I had to go work out. And the amazing thing is every single time after I worked out, I felt really good and I was glad I went.
Yeah, 100%. It's always the same. It's always like, I'm just not feeling it. And then you go, you're like, gym is the best thing. I'm having so much fun. And yeah, the same as social. Like sometimes, I think that's another problem with depression and porn is like losing your social circle or just desire to go out and socialize. But yeah, sometimes, you know, you've had a long day. It doesn't feel exciting to go and do social. It just feels like another chore or something. But then when you go and do it, you feel refreshed, especially now we all work online. It's really positive thing to go and see people.
It's a big part of the problem today, in addition to the power of internet pornography, is the lack of social interactions with live people, especially after the virus thing that's out in the world. And people need human touch nowadays with Zoom. Well, like now, like we're not together in a room. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, and you're in Portugal. And, you know, there's so many great things about technology. That's one of the things, like we are able to do this. But on the other hand, people are not seeing people as much and being with people. I've got a client and his major form of social interaction is gaming. Yes, he's talking to his friends, but it's all over the computer. He doesn't see them in person. And until he addresses that, he's not going to get better. Like you need people. You need to see, hug a live, breathing human being.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. We didn't answer my question, I've realized, on the, is there a healthy amount of porn in terms of a level where you're not getting desensitized and it's not interrupting your relationships and things?
Yeah. If you listen to my podcast, Porn Talk, my first couple episodes, I talk about the healthy use of porn, like to spice up the bedroom and things like that. But I've since learned a lot since then. And I can't in good conscience anymore say that there's a healthy use of porn. One of the things I learned a lot about is sex trafficking. And a lot of these women online, they may appear to be enjoying it. They may appear to want to be doing these acts. But a lot of them have been sex trafficked. There's a movie, it's a true story, and it's called The Sound of Freedom. I highly recommend watching it. And it talks about those trafficking of children. When you are watching porn, you're voting for it. You're letting the advertisers know on there that, yes, these people want this. There is demand for this. So I'm going to advertise on here. And so when you're watching porn, you're voting for the porn industry. You're voting for sex trafficking, for the trafficking of children. You are voting for money laundering and drug cartels, because these big tube sites, people think, oh, they're in the business of pornography. Well, that is true, but really what they're in the business of is money laundering. So they can take all the money from drugs and they put it into the pornography business so it can be easily disseminated. So I can no longer say there's a healthy use of porn. So anyway, short answer is no, I no longer believe there is a healthy use of porn.
Okay. That was interesting to dig into, but I guess that's more of an external doing something better for the world, which is of course important. But, you know, like, can you get people to change their diet or do all these other things to help the rest of the world? It can be detached. But more specifically, like, regardless of the rest of the world, can you watch porn and be a healthy person?
Like I was talking about earlier about alcohol. Like, people can drink a couple beers or even hard alcohol and be fine. And sure, yeah, there's people that watch porn and go on to lead healthy lives. So yeah, of course, but I don't recommend it.
See, I mean, alcohol technically, there's lots of people that have a quote healthy relationship with alcohol, but technically it's a pretty linear relationship based on how much alcohol you have in your blood versus how many brain cells you're killing. And it's still better to not have one drink of alcohol a week. Like, there's all this red wine is healthy, but it's not. Like, you could just have the red wine without the alcohol and it would be healthier. It's not from the alcohol. And let's say you're single and you don't want to go chasing people the entire time. And I was single for quite a long time because I was busy doing stuff and wasn't depressed. And it's kind of healthy to at least masturbate sort of semi-regularly. But it doesn't necessarily have to involve porn.
Even in the animal kingdom, animals masturbate. But masturbation and porn are two different things. Like when they're mixed together, that can be toxic. But yeah, there's definitely, on that regard, for masturbation, you're absolutely, there's a healthy use of masturbation for sure. But you had talked about alcohol and how it affects you. And that's a good analogy, really. Same kind of thing with the porn. Like, let's say you are single. Try and just use masturbation without pornography. Because what happens is it prevents you from going out into the real world to seek mates. That's what we were talking about. For example, let's say you're at a bar and there's this attractive woman. I could approach this woman and try to strike up a conversation with this woman. But she could reject me. Or I could go home. And I know I won't be rejected by pornography and I could go and masturbate to pornography. So that is literally preventing you from meeting a live, breathing person. And also, think about it. Like, if you're approaching an attractive woman, let's say you really let it out the night before, you know, you watched all kinds of porn. Are you going to approach that woman with a lot of confidence? Or maybe would you be just a little bit meek approaching her like, oh, hi, you know, like, how are you? And she's like, who's this weak person? You don't want to talk to that person. Or you've been building up this sexual energy within you, this sexual power that is in you. It's a part of you and you haven't been giving it to porn.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like when we say the word porn addiction, it pushes you towards the sort of person that maybe watches multiple hours or like has to leave work and stuff. Or like in the UK, there was a politician a few years ago who was caught in the Commons watching porn and was fired instantly on the spot. But then could someone who just watches porn like two or three times a week and doesn't really get around to dealing with their single sex life be counted as someone that's addicted to porn who might on the surface look like they have a sort of healthy relationship?
Yes. It's going to catch up to you. And yes, there's people that can use it on occasion and be fine. But again, I would say try to just use masturbation without porn if you're a single person. Pun intended, it's a slippery slope that you're on. AI will start presenting you, hey, what about this? What about this? And then you go down this rabbit hole and like that rabbit hole goes down forever and ever. So much so, I had a woman on my podcast, really unspeakable. Her dad, the woman on the podcast, Rebecca Baines, her father was on a satanic cult. And they used her to make pornography and other things. And so like depths that this goes to is unbelievable. There was a serial killer here in the United States. In an interview, they were talking about pornography. And he said, not all people that watch porn become serial killers, but all serial killers watch porn. It's unlikely, I would say, that you're going to become a serial killer because you're watching porn. But my point is like, birds of a feather flock together. Do you want to be in that flock?
Yeah, it's crazy. I like that quote. That's funny.
Flock, no.
Not. Yeah, thanks. That's a really good way of looking at it.
Well, reminds me of a TV commercial I saw years ago, back when they had these big TV sets. And I had these two kids staring at the TV catatonic, like they were in a hypnotized. And this trash man comes in with a metal trash can, and he opens the top of the TV and he dumps all this garbage in, and then he puts the top back down on the TV and he walks out and the kids are still there, catatonic. So on a physical level, on a spiritual level, moral level, pouring in garbage, you're going to get garbage out. So maybe you're not addicted to it. Maybe you can watch some porn here and there, but putting garbage in, it's going to come out in some way, shape, or form.
On that positive note, we can start rounding up the interview a bit more, unless there's something you specifically want me to ask you.
Well, I come bearing gifts. So for those that are listening to the podcast, if you would, I've got a couple of resources. One is my audiobook. It's called Everything You Know About Sex and Porn Addiction Is Wrong, The 21 Myths About Sex and Porn Addiction. If you email me, eric@powerfuleric.com, or if you just go to powerfuleric.com, you can get a free copy 100% free of that book. And I also have another book that's an Amazon number one Amazon bestseller that I co-wrote with Brian Tracy and some other authors. It's called Think Big. My story is in Think Big, along with some other fantastic stories. And if you would like a copy of that, you can email me about that well, or you can also get that from my website. So that's powerfulair.com.
Cool. Thank you. Good times. All right. Thanks. I have two questions that I like to ask people just to round them up. One is slightly weird. I haven't even worked out why I'm asking it. I just like asking it. What is one of your earliest memories?
One of my earliest memories is of my cat, a little black cat. And at first we were going to name her Midnight because, you know, it's dark. But then we ended up calling her Velvet. And I was sleeping with my cat, Velvet.
Cute. Yeah, I'm not sure how that plays into the rest of the psychology of your life. Okay, then the other question is, what is one of the kindest things someone has done for you?
Well, I can't help but think of one of my clients. When his wife kind of put him up to it, he didn't want to take my program. And he really came in dragging his heels. And then at the end, when everything was done and him and his wife were good, he just had the most sincere thank you. He's like, do you remember how I was when we first started? I'm like, oh, yeah. And he says, you know, I just really want to thank you. It was a heartfelt thank you for saving him from porn and saving his marriage. That's one thing that comes to mind.
Cool. Yeah, that's a wrap. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot for Eric coming on the show. If you are suffering from a porn addiction problem, I would, of course, check out his resources and consider getting some help. Links are in the description. The research for this episode and the conversation really did change my mind on the whole world of porn, and I'm interested to hear your feedback and if you'd like to hear more on this or about any addictions in general. If you have a friend that won't stop fapping, please send them this episode as a gentle reminder that they are funding trafficking of children and satanic cults. Leaving a good review on your podcast player of choice does go a long way to stop me from crying myself to sleep at night, so please be generous. And on that, life is certainly far too short to waste it watching fake sex on TV screens and not working on the meaningful parts of your life that will provide happiness. So remember to be kind to yourself and get away from porn before the AI overlord fries your brain.
Hi, I'm Jessica Porter, and I'm a hypnotherapist, as well as a total relaxation nerd. If you're struggling to sleep at night, I'm here to help. Sleep Magic is my new podcast of relaxing hypnosis, created to help you doze off tonight. With my episodes every Wednesday, I'm going to make suggestions that help you relax really, really deeply. And hypnosis is not what you've seen on TV. There's no swinging pocket watch or clucking like a chicken. I promise. I'm just here to help you make friends with sleep again so you can get the rest you deserve. So search Sleep Magic on your favorite podcast app, and I'll see you there.